If you want to read her long list of credits, the Washington Post just did a several column article on her because the Smithsonian Folklife Festival had an entire tent dedicated to Hazel's music. And there were about almost 5 hours of music going on, and each of the groups that was up on the stage had Hazel assigned us two of her songs to do, and two of the songs that she'd written. She's a songwriter beyond compare. She has a real...
Oh my God, you go on.
And she draws very much from her own experiences and her heightened awareness of what's going on. Even while she's experiencing it, she's watching it. Those of you who met my father know that he does that. In the experience and building for a story or weaving a tale after it's all over at the same time. And Hazel was born and grew up in Mercer County, West Virginia, which is down in the southern part, right beside McDowell County. Yeah, where Doc Scott was from.
Mercer County.
So, during this, if you have questions of her, as I said, this is a visit, it's not a performance.
This time in the morning, it can't be. Yeah. You're lucky to get me up.
I know.
I wouldn't do this for just anybody.
No, right. when I first came to West Virginia about 20 years ago, I was introduced to her recordings with Alice Gerard.
You're only
going to
fall so far.
You're only going to fall so far. I don't know. Women can fall pretty far sometimes. You men get all those. Just kidding, Paul. Paul's been one of my best supporters. Always there to help.
Anyway, about 12 years ago, when I did finally come over to the to Augusta, because I just wanted to, wanted to be around Hazel. And I took a songwriting class, because that's what she was teaching, never intending to write a song, and I haven't yet, but I just wanted to be at where she was. And I felt very left out, that everyone else knew everybody, they all knew where they were going, and went to my room crying Monday night, and was ready to go home Tuesday when Hazel and I got caught in a little rain shower and we just started visiting. She's real easy to talk to about anything, and we were visiting, and I told her that, I wasn't out jamming because I didn't really feel like I belonged. And her statement was, "You grew up with this, and they came here to study what you grew up with. You already have it." Yes. I know.
What I remember. I'll tell you what I remember.
Okay.
I remember at a gospel thing that we were singing, and we, whoever the performers were that was on, and Jenny obviously had listened to the record. She was, I was singing A Few More Years Shall Roll, and she was kind of mouthing it, and the audience, I said, "Well, get up here and sing it." And I think that was the first time Jenny was on the stage, I'm not sure.
Wow.
But she got up and we sang it, just she knew every word. Mm-hmm. And we just fell into it and sang so easily, you know, because she grew up here too, and she knew the phrasing. And from there on in, you know, it's like a friendship and a sharing.
Yes, it really has. And you know how your voice sometimes will change according to who you sing with, you know, and I've been told that my voice changes when I sing with Hazel. You know, it's a whole different sound by people. I've been told that by people who know both of us pretty well. All right, well, you want to see if we can get through Go Watch and Chain?
Oh, yeah, sure. I think I thought of that weird verse that I tacked onto it.
Oh, yes, don't do that.
I said, we're people in the folk needs to really borrow and steal from any place they can. And it's like called a folk process. And what do we do this in EOC?
Oh, and,
so that one verse I got from another song. See, you took your ring off too.
No, I only have one ring. Somebody take? Oh my.
It's behind your chair.
There's
something behind your chair.
Yeah, there's a wedding ring back there.
Somebody's
going to.
He's not
going to
touch it.
That's
what this is.
Need money?
Need money? Oh, wait, I already got one.
Sum it up like in a
capsule, but
I think there was a period in in my father's life, in his working career, where that he was doing fairly well as far as working people go. I don't mean that they had a lot. They owed practically for everything they had, but I think during the Depression, after the Depression, he lost everything. And he was never a wealthy man, but always very hard-working people, and my mother never worked outside the home. And but after that, after they lost everything, it seems like the rest of the kids then, the ones that came after that, which I was included in, things just started going downhill after that, and we were all raised very, very poor. And generally with barely enough on the table to eat, and definitely not enough like things to wear to school or school books or things like that. And so there were a lot that we were not exposed to because of that. We didn't get outside of the home to do things or to go places, or we didn't have books around to read. So it's amazing that any of us really actually did anything other than, you know, just going to work and coming home. And lots of my brothers and sisters actually did play music and sang. And one of my brothers that went in service did play in the USO shows some. And so that, you know, they can talk about poverty and growing up poor and all like that, but if you have something to offer, it really doesn't keep you down in that respect. I mean, you keep observing and looking around, and you know, you're taking everything in. So you do absorb a lot, and you do take, you know, what you have, and you do the best that you can with it. And I think that's what a lot of my family did. We certainly didn't. I certainly didn't have a lot of people to encourage me, you know, to keep singing. They liked it. It seemed like when I did it, but certainly they didn't say, "Go do it." In fact, I worked since I was 16. I never asked. Once I left home to go to work, I never asked my parents for a dime after that. And it seemed like that in order to do this music, you had to, really did have to have a day job. And when I really did start to think of that seriously, I was getting older, and most of the ones in the family that were like the steady people who went up to work every day and they come back and they did their washing and ironing, and then they got up the next morning and they went to work again, and the whole week was just like that. And they said, "You must be crazy to think you're going out this late date, you know, to have a career, or, you know, if you would have started earlier, you would have been fine, you know, if you just started earlier." And then when I got married, my father said, "Well, I guess you're not going to sing anymore." I said, "No, I hadn't thought about it." So, you know, there are all those kinds of things that would try to keep you back because of tradition and the way they were raised, all like that. But you know, I can't really point to any one thing, except maybe as far as me going ahead and getting out of that and doing something. Maybe friends that I met when I moved to the city that were not connected, were not raised like we were raised, and they said, you know, they were excited about the music. Like pushing, "Oh, I want to hear those old songs, you know, I want to," and they wanted to learn, they wanted to sing, and
this was in Baltimore.
It was in Baltimore. And I mean, that I think that encouraged me, and that helped me more than anything else, because it gave me something I hadn't, it gave me something to hold on to, and something, some feeling of self-worth. I didn't have anything up to that point. I had, you know, anybody can go out and work, and most of the jobs I excelled at that I did go out and work, because I had to quit school and I couldn't do like secretarial work or anything like that. I generally had to do factory work or waitressing or But I always excelled, whatever job I had, I did do something with it. I would, in the factory, I became an instructor. In the waitressing job, I became assistant manager. In retail, I became, finally worked my way up to a manager. And with the music, I began writing my own songs, and I think that was the turning point. I didn't know that I could write. I had absolutely no idea that I could put two lines together, or even a whole, you know, a paragraph. And so you never know, when you're reaching out to give a helping hand to somebody, you never know what they're going to do with that. I mean, you may be, that may be the cream of the coffee for them. You just never know. And so that's what happened to me.
Do you remember the first song you wrote?
well, sort of. You know, it's not one that I've ever sung.
Yeah. But I was just wondering about the experience of writing a song. Were you shy to sing it out in front of people?
Oh, no, I never would, yeah. There was one song. I'll give those away. But the one song that they said that I sang around with the family in the beginning was sort of patterned after the Carter family. And I don't know if I could even remember even a verse to it.
That was a Carter Family song, by the way, that we just did.
Yes.
Sort of had our own take on it, I don't think.
Yeah,
Sarah and Maybell ever did it quite like that.
But that's the beauty of being a folk music. You can take it and do whatever you want to with it. There are those purists who don't want it changed at all, that want it done exactly like the way that it was done. And, of course, that's fine, too. I used to do that. And then, you know, sometimes you like to put a little bit of yourself in there and interpret it the way that you feel or you see it, particularly if you feel sometimes a lot more emotion than the song that other people have brought out in the song. You may be feeling something quite different.
One of the reasons why we're talking about Hazel's songwriting, for those of you who don't know, just as by way of example of how wonderful her songwriting is, right now one of the songs you wrote years ago is for the fifth month in a row number one on the bluegrass charts, and recorded by Lynn Morris, and the album is number one. And the song.
Actually, it got in the final, we just heard before I come down here, that it's in the five finalists, and it might be Song of the Year.
Oh. Oh. He's going to sing it Friday night.
The Mama's Hand. Yeah, it was quite amazing. The song's been sitting there all those years. This business is so crazy. I wouldn't even attempt to try to explain it. But a lot of times people will record, if people are well known, they'll just mine everything that these people do, and they will, even if the song is not very good, they will do it. And there are other people, pretty obscure people, that they will not go to their song. But now we have women coming along who are saying, no more of that, you know. We have something to say when we have something to sing, and we're going to sing about it and talk about it. Well, Lynn Morris started buying every record that she could find of mine and coming to everything that I did, and she began doing the song. And this is the second one that she put at the top of the charts for many months. But this is the first time that we can think of, we have people researching it, because if I win, I would like to, they'll call you up, it's the thing, and I'd like to tell it. I believe it's the first time that there was a woman that wrote a song about a woman that was sung and recorded by a woman in a field of bluegrass. And
if, you know, if we were talking last night too, it's there are songs that we could all think of about daughters' relationships with their fathers, and sons with their mothers and their fathers. But there are very few songs. We were trying to think of, if there are any songs of just the whole
song
about mother and daughter.
There was a book written about that. I haven't read it. They said it was quite good. It's
Anyway.
Talks about the rivalry and the competition, you know, between the mother and the daughter, all that, and the deep bonds that that exist between mother and daughter.
Do you think you could get through lost patterns this morning?
You lead me?
No. You know, she made it one time here at the Ice House years ago. Hazel came and we sat for 3 hours down on that bottom level singing, and she never once sang lead. She loves to sing tenor so much, you know, she's singing that harmony part. No, you lead.
Yeah, I regret that, not that particular thing, but I regret that that I fell into that pattern, because years ago, the beginning records, which actually have just been reissued on Smithsonian Bugways, the two first records that I ever did with Alice Gerard, period, the first time I recorded. And I didn't do any. I only did a couple of leads. I did one solo on there, and I did a couple of leads. And I regret that, because it would have been interesting to show people what I was doing at that point in time. And, you know, that's what I get for locking the clean tenor.
Yeah. Anybody have a question? How many I just thought of one more. How many brothers and sisters did you have?
There was 11 of us. Mm-hmm. One miss, but had 12. We did actually take my niece in to raise her until she was 17.
I think you'll find a lot of families in West Virginia that do that. I know Melvin Wine did. I think Melvin and his wife had 11 or 12, but they raised four more also, you know, and, you know, with not a lot there, but somebody, you know, there was a child there that he'd taken in, so.
Well, they always helped other, that was not the only one, you know. Mm-hmm. They took in, if the families broke up, they would go get some of the kids, and they would help out until they got, you know, a place to stay.
Did all your brothers and sisters sing, or was there one that couldn't carry a tune?
There was a couple that really could. I don't think my oldest sister really could sing all that well. But it was funny, though, because one of her sons, he could have actually been a singer. And he did. I was so surprised. It was one Christmas I went over there, and he began singing some of that old stuff, like Stanley Brothers stuff. And I was absolutely surprised that he had a really good voice. And nobody ever said, you know, why don't you sing for a living instead of going out and doing manual labor. I think he really could make a career out of it. Most of my brothers and sisters sang and played. A couple of my brothers played several different instruments. I never could do a lead instrument, and I never could get through the practice part of it. I get bored if I go through the same chord very many times. You know, you got to sit doing banjo, or I'm sure mandolin must be there.
Banjo.
I just don't have that kind of a head. I want to move on to something else. I mean, I must have dozens of songs that I have started and I've never finished. You know, I have lots of them I have finished, but, you know, I have a kind of a head. What I do is I keep the composition book, and I will keep all the whatever it is that I've written, and then some years later I can go back and finish the song. Something else. I will be in a different mood, and I'll bring something more to the song than I will bring at that particular time.
Have you ever collaborated with any other writers?
Never had. No. I've always kind of thought about that.
Did you have a question?
Did your parents sing, or who were your influences?
I think my mother used to sing around the kitchen, but my father was a powerful singer. He was probably what you might say on the level of Bill Monroe or somebody like that, although he didn't
sing like Bill Monroe, but they used to get him to lead the, they sang unaccompanied, and they used to get him to lead the songs in the church.
Hazel grew up in the Primitive Baptist Church that Elder Paul Hopkins is with, and I grew up in too. Question back there.
Yeah, I really like your song, Old Calloused Hands. I've heard a lot of other people sing it. I've never heard you sing it.
Well,
if you have time.
This is a true song about my sister. If I tell you the story, I won't get through it. I'll tell you the story afterwards.
Thank you.
Well, she called me aside one time when she was visiting one of her rare visits to Baltimore after my parents lived up there. And she took me in the upstairs bedroom and she said, she told me how she had been being treated at home. And she had had 9 children. And she said that her husband had black lines, and he was drawing black lines. I mean, he was like a shell of a man, but yet he had all this venom inside him. And she said he would talk to her like a dog. She had to go out and work in the laundry to get any money, yet some of the money that he was drawing was supposed to go to her. And she said that he told her that if she didn't work for him or clean his house, cook his meals, he said, "You're no more than a maid to me. I will kick you out on the street. You'll be out on the street." And I would just absolutely floored because this woman was the salt of the earth. I mean, she was not like anybody that you would meet anywhere that you can think of that would do anything against anyone. She was like the perfect mother. And she was just a woman.